for those that are just kind of jumping in, if you don't know who this is Josh Smith. So often I want to go and say John Smith because it's so rolls off the tongue, but it's Josh Smith. And if you don't know about him, which I doubt most of you won't by now, he's a master bladesmith who is the president of Montana Knife Company and somebody that I admire from a business perspective. To watch a company grow and to spike into the stratosphere the way that you have recently is quite interesting to watch. And the fact that you vlog it all as well just shows how authentic and real you guys are and how much of a community you are. So I wanted to have a chat with you because seems like you went from zero to 60, but I know that there is a long backstory behind you and all the hard work that you've put in to get to the point where you are now.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on, and I enjoyed, we were just chatting there about Andy Stumpf. I enjoyed listening to your podcast with Andy, and it's cool what you're doing too. So no, I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, no worries. That's very nice to hear. Andy is he's an interesting individual and he's a fun dude. The thing I enjoy about talking to Andy on his show is he's got a good ping pong effect. He's quick. And you don't often get that, I find, with other guests. So anytime I get a chance to go sit down with him, I'm like, oh, let's go. Cause I know we're just gonna do this. And it's like this good dance. And so it's always a fun show. I'm glad you enjoyed the episode. That one went off the rails a little bit.
it's on Andy's, when I talk to Andy when I'm on his podcast, it's the only time he's really not a dick.
Right?
Yeah. He's usually, you know, when you're just chatting with him, you know, off camera, he's just an abusive asshole. Mm-hmm. But when you're on camera, he's pretty, generally pretty nice. Occasionally he gets one in there, but.
Yeah, he's not bad. I mean, there is moments where I think about text messages I've had or things like that with him where I go, you know.
Yeah,
I think if anybody saw that.
I think this morning, I just picked up my phone. I think it said something about calling me a schoolgirl this morning because I shot him a quick DM because I was just in my Instagram, shot him a DM message. And then he wrote back like, hey, thanks, blah, 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 blah. And then he said, you could have just texted me instead of sliding into my DMs. It's something about like a schoolgirl or something. So
perfect. Well, yeah, my response to that is then you should answer your text messages, Andy.
Yeah, there you go.
How's that? Yeah. No one will need to slide into your DMs if you just answer. That's how it works.
Yeah, he keeps that appearance of being so busy.
Oh, I love that. Oh my gosh, I love where this is going. Let's take this another step. Okay.
Going to name this the Trash Andy Stumpf podcast, right?
There's a few people that'll enjoy the shit out of that.
Yeah,
but I gotta say he's a good guy, but for the most part, yeah, he definitely has a way of harassing you very quietly and subtly where he's like jabbing you and then you don't realize it's happening until it's already there. But I've been lucky enough where he hasn't gone too hard in the paint with me on that. I can imagine with you it's much easier for me. I'm sure there's a little bit of like a don't try and cancel me, please don't.
Yeah, the only reason I hang out around him is really I like Leah.
See, Kate, don't brag about that though now, because you don't understand. I was supposed to meet her on the last trip, but she's this world jiu-jitsu badass who's like, I got to go to the US and go all over and do these training camps with people because my husband isn't strong enough to beat me. So I have to go and do it because Andy can't. And I didn't get a chance to meet her. And it's the second time now.
She's super, super sweet. That's the thing that's crazy about jiu-jitsu with these people that do it is, like you got to be careful who you mouth off to or who you, you know, potentially try to assault or something like that. Cause like Leah, like is like the nicest person you would ever meet. And like, she would tear my limbs off and beat me with them. You know, she's a savage, but, you would never know. She's just super sweet.
And merciless too. And would feel nothing about it.
Yeah.
He was telling a story on the show about how the first time he decided to beat his wife and the repercussions of those actions. And I said to him, I was like, at what point did you go, you know what? This person has decided to marry me. That Navy SEAL decided to marry that guy and is going to put up with me. So to reward her, I'm going to choke her out. Who thought that was a good idea going into a marriage? Smarten up.
Yeah, exactly.
blows my mind sometimes, some of the things he does, and somehow he got really lucky with her. So I'm stoked. I do want to meet her. I've been looking forward to that. So whenever that happens, I will be sure to make sure that he harasses her a little bit for me afterwards.
There you go.
You got to build the bond, man. You got to build the bonds. It's through dark humor and uncomfortable comments that people build bonds. And I love to hear that you're in the same kind of outfit. Cause I'm only assuming, just assuming your workspace is an environment is not exactly the woke environments I'm seeing in companies anymore.
It's not the most PC place around here. That's for sure. We flesh that stuff out pretty quickly. So now it's a fun place to work. And I actually had to work somewhat in that environment, you know, at the local power company when I was a lineman, and kind of work in the PC woke environment. And when you start your own company, you can decide what kind of a company you want to run, which is, let's face it, it's half the reason I started it, because I couldn't deal with that shit anymore. So
see, that's what I want to dive into with you too, because I feel like there's a lot, we know a lot about the knives, we know a lot about the company, but knowing a lot more about you, I've seen your podcast, you've got a great show, and it seems like you open up pretty well. You're quite vulnerable on it. You're pretty honest about your feelings on a lot of things, and you use your social media as well. I've seen you post a lot of emails and clapbacks to people and just kind of like putting people in their spots where they should be. And I think that's okay. And I'm glad to see you doing it, because there is this movement happening in the world where companies are going down this woke path, and they are, well, I don't think they care about the repercussions, clearly, because look at some of these largest conglomerates going out and creating the woke agenda advertisement. All it ends up doing is making people go broke. So it seems like people are really leaning into the, you know, made in America, pro America, and kind of what your company stands for. With that, I didn't realize that you've been making knives as long as you have. Hey, humans. This episode of the Brass and Unity podcast is sponsored by Cured Nutrition. I want to talk to you guys about sleep. We all know that sleep is one of the most important tools when getting your life together and optimizing your wellness and general well-being. Cured Sleep Bundle, which combines their best-selling Zen and most potent CBN, is the answer to guaranteeing that you'll get a full night of sleep every single night. Zen is a blend of functional mushrooms, adaptogens, and full-spectrum cannabinoids. The CBN extract is a lesser-known cannabinoid found in the hemp plant, but these supplements were designed to support the two most critical stages of your body's natural sleep cycle, REM sleep and non-REM, deep sleep. Cured's raw CBN oil contains 30 milligrams of CBD and 5 milligrams of CBN. Together, the CBD and CBN create a synergistic whole-body effect. When it kicks in, you'll notice every inch of your body soften into a deeper state of relaxation, as if you're laying beneath the comfort of a weighted blanket. Once you're asleep, Zen is there to ensure that your body is successfully cycling out of non-REM, deep sleep, into REM, and back again. Some people can't fall asleep, others can't stay asleep, and then those that just fall asleep, stay asleep, but struggle to spend enough time in each sleep stage. No matter what is keeping you from your true rest and restoration, the sleep bundle is your solution. Think of it as the 1-2 punch for the body and brain reset. So I've been struggling with sleep for a little while now, dealing with TBI and other ailments, but I'm telling you right now, this stuff is legit. It gets me to sleep. It keeps me asleep. And I don't wake up feeling groggy. I don't have any of the side effects that any other type of medication or CBD product that sometimes happen. I've also been able to focus a lot more on what my body needs because I'm able to get into a deeper sleep. This stuff is amazing, guys, and I want you to go give it a shot. Cured is giving all of our listeners 20% off. So you can go and grab it at curednutrition.com/brass and check out. That's right. Cured Nutrition, CuredNutrition.com/brass, and get an extra 20% off. Improve your sleep. It'll improve your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been making knives since I was 11. So I'm 40. I just turned 42. So,
wow.
Over 30 years. So yeah, it's been my whole life, quite frankly. I mean, I've had a little break in the middle there when I became a lineman, and I grew up doing excavation as well and that stuff. But, and with the knife company and with, you know, I honestly try with like Instagram and stuff to not get too political. You know, we don't really touch much of that on the MKC page. We just, not that we are like woke or scared of it. I just, We kind of keep the MKC page professional, but I think it's pretty obvious when you follow us how we feel. Now, if you want to follow MKC deeper and you want to follow me personally, like, I'm going to post my opinion about shit. Now, I honestly actually try to check myself a bit even on that, because quite honestly, half the stuff I open up and look on Instagram, I agree with. I just get tired of seeing it. Like, even if it's a political opinion, or, hey, another, you know, back when this was happening, like another post about the masks on like COVID, and it's like, holy shit, we all agree. I just like, you just get tired of seeing it, right? And so I actually try to generally just show my life, like, hey, we're doing this stuff with the kids, or I'm doing this with knives, or I'm hunting. Occasionally, I can't help it, and I have to comment on something where I'm just like, are you serious? Like, these clowns are actually our politicians? Like, holy shit. But I actually try to check myself a little bit, just because, like, I don't want my page to be a reflection of the other 600 pages you open, because it's a bit of a echo chamber as well. Like, a lot of the people you follow, we all generally have a similar opinion about stuff. So, like, we're just yelling back and forth, agreeing with each other about things, right? So,
I'm you glad know, you said it, that though.
Try to occasionally take like a little different take on something and whatnot. But yeah, I also think that, in that being said, I think it's important, and I think people do have an appetite to actually learn who the people behind the company, who they are, you know. So, with all that being said, I think it's important occasionally to express an opinion. Now, you can agree or disagree, and I'm fine if somebody wants to disagree with it, if it's respectful and it's like, hey, you and I don't see eye to eye on this issue, but we generally align in general with how we want our country to be, or how we want to raise our kids, or whatever. But I do, like, it was one thing that I did love about Black Rifle Coffee early on, was that you could follow Evan Hafer, or you could follow Matt or Jared, and you actually got a real good sense on their page of who that company was, you know. And I think that's important with our brand to show that, you know.
Is that, so what year did Montana Knife start?
Kind of unofficially, in 2020 during COVID. I kind of made the first prototypes in the end of 2019. But we launched our website in July of 2020, but I still had a full-time job until essentially January 1st of 21. And then we really got serious about it in 21 after I quit my job. So yeah, during really right, like diving straight into the COVID black hole was when we started MKC.
Felt like that was the right time to start a business, did you?
Yeah. I mean, why make it easy on yourself? Just do it the exact hard way. And, you know, it was interesting, like, you know, when I quit making custom knives full time, and I took my, you know, I ended up becoming a lineman, and kind of took the corporate job for a while. That was back in 2010 when the economy had crashed and housing market was bad. And I listened to a lot of I had young kids, and I listened to a lot of the, like, hey, the world's ending news on television. And I had an opportunity for a job that provided a lot of security and stability. And I kind of listened to a lot of that news, and I took that path, and it was good. I don't regret doing what I did, but this time I just decided to turn the news off and flat ignore it. Like, I could give two shits less about COVID. In the first couple of weeks, I was like, okay, this is like clearly a thing. And I you know, kind of got a little nervous about, like, parents and, like, hey, we better be careful here, because all of us didn't really know what this thing was, like, seemed pretty serious. And then in about a month, it was like, okay, it's killing old and fat people. Like, we're good to go. So,
oh, man,
let's move on. And so we flat just decided to completely ignore and lived our lives. And thankfully, like, where our kids go to school, you know, after that first spring, going back into the next school year, they rolled school on, played sports, did everything like it was non-existent. So very thankful to kind of live where we do and have that happen, you know.
Yeah, that's something I wish so many other people would have taken notice of. But unfortunately, like you said, so quickly people got sucked. Hey, humans, I know you've all been seeing me drink HVMN's Ketone IQ lately. This is a game changer. Jet fuel in a bottle. I use Ketone IQ for everything in my life, whether it's running, cycling, podcasting, or just the extra boost that my brain needs. I won't lie, it helps push me to the next level in all things. I love Ketone IQ and what HVMN stands for. Go grab some shots today at HVMN.com and use the code BRASS20 and save. Into this vortex of just sheer world destruction, all due to a virus. And it was a weird point for a lot of people because it kicked people into fight or flight, and you really saw who went where and who's stuck in that kind of continual cycle of just downward sadness and destruction, which really is not reality. That's not.
Yeah. It's actually interesting because I was listening. I'd only just before that happened found Andy Frisella's podcast with First Form. And he was saying at that same time, and I'd like to actually go back and pull some clips from it and play it, because I remember specifically I was trying to start MKC, and I remember him saying when they did the shutdowns, some of you people are going to pull back and you're going to hide in your house and you're going to hide in your shell and you're not going to do shit for however long this lasts. Little did we all know it was going to last, you know, a year and a half. Some of you are going to do that. And some of us are going to slam the gas pedal to the floor and we're going to keep going. And when this is all said and done, some of us are going to emerge in a different place than others. And, you know, I really feel like we built MKC in the middle of COVID, all the way through it. And thank God I didn't listen to the news and just say, like, you know, let's start this company in another year. Let's like wait till next year. Like, thank God I didn't do that. You know,
I can relate with that a lot. We started the podcast during COVID. We're like, yeah, that makes sense. I understand how you can make that decision. You seem like the type of individual who's going to look for the opportunity really through anything. And Andy Frisella is somebody that I listen to, and he's a show that I know of and someone that I appreciate the voice that comes from him. And it seems like the really basic worldview, very common sense worldview, that if you really do break things down to the smallest points of what he's saying, it all makes sense. And these are realities that people don't want to witness, don't want to see, don't want to acknowledge. And that's fine. You can live in that space if you choose to, but you do not have to. And that's something that I like about him, is that point. And I'm glad you were able to do that. I know for starting a company for you, because you did make custom knives before, how has that been transitioning, going from more intricate designs kind of into things like the, you know, the Speed Goat, and how you produce knives now?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. You know, it's totally different, right? And this blew up so much that I haven't had a lot of time to build customs, though I still want to, and I still plan on doing that. But, you know, it bothered me. For years, I was making really high-end, essentially art knives, right? Knives that people were collecting and not using. But I live around blue-collar people that hunt and fish and work and like to use their knives. And one, it was hard for me to make a knife that was affordable for that guy. And two, the knives I was making weren't really being used. They were being collected for how pretty they were, which is super cool. People paying thousands of dollars for a knife and collecting it as art is really neat. But there is something about getting an Instagram message or an email or a phone call or text, and somebody saying, me and my three sons all just killed elk this weekend. We used your knives, like the hunt of a lifetime. Your knives worked amazing. What a tool. Like, this is a keepsake. I'm going to pass down to my grandson. Like this thing just worked its ass off, and it was it was awesome. There's something gratifying about that, you know, and there's also something gratifying about maybe a guy or a gal that doesn't make much money, that's, you know, it's making 15 bucks an hour working somewhere or whatever, but they decide to spend their hard earned money on one of our knives and then use it on their hunt of a lifetime. You know, we talked about like going on a bear hunt or something. If you buy one hunt in your life, and this is like, I get to go to Alaska one time, I'm going to go goat hunt. Every piece of gear you take is incredibly important to you. And for someone to choose to spend money on our stuff and take it on that experience is really cool. So it's a transition. It's a different way of making the knives. And I still, and I miss doing like the artwork craft side of it. But I think the feedback from our customers and our users is actually more rewarding. It's just really cool.
Well, not only that, I mean, you're now a part of that family's history.
Yeah.
You are a conversation that gets passed down through time, and other human beings, when you're not here, will talk about you, how you were as an entrepreneur, what you've done for your community. And then they'll talk about the quality of the product because it's going to sustain and last that long. That's the difference.
Yeah. And you're right. And what's cool is like that knife that's sitting there to your left, that Speed Goat, that's not a super, super like fancy high-end knife. Right. But what's cool about that knife is in 100 years, like, let's face it, that knife isn't like some crazy piece of artwork or whatever, but in 100 years, somebody might be like, my great grandmother had this knife. She had this cool podcast and she went on this hunt or she did this or that. And she talked to all these badass people, and that knife might be rewrapped in a piece of leather or a shoelace or a different piece of cord. And it might have a leather sheath that, that somebody 50 years from now makes for it. But that thing will be a remnant. It doesn't matter how fancy it is. That thing is a remnant of time past. Like most everything else, same with your book. Like there's very few things that are passed down, right? Like I've always said, knives and guns, as men, knives and guns have generally been something we pass down. With women, like on that front, like chef's knives, for sure. Like my mom has her grandmother's chef's knives and some of her pans and stuff like that. Recipes, right? Books, and then art and jewelry. Like that's about the list. Everything else in your house, maybe a handmade quilt or something like that, but nothing you buy at Target you're going to pass down.
No.
I've sharpened hundreds of knives over the years for people that have walked into my shop and said, this was my grandpa's knife, this was my grandma's knife. And it never matters how fancy the knife is. It's never like how collectible it is. It's never any of that. It's generally just an average knife of whatever company or brand. It doesn't matter. It's who owned it, what experience they had with it. My great grandfather went to Alaska, or he was a butcher, whatever. And that's the point,
There's so much that you said there that was so huge. You're so right. It's true. I mean, I've had two house fires when I was younger. So I don't have a lot of things that have been passed down. Because of that, I'm very sentimental when it comes to my things. And because I don't like a lot of stuff, I'm really picky about my stuff. I wear expensive, really good quality hats that I'm going to pass down. My son already wears one of them. Like I have things that matter to me. And this knife is one. Do you know how I got this knife? Do you know the story of this knife?
No.
Okay. Well, I got to tell you the story.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you the story of the knife, and then I'm going to dive into a million other of those awesome things you just said.
Good. And I want to go back to the house fire before you move on past this story. So,
okay. I'm going to make note. House fire. Yeah, I know. It's so this knife, I was at SHOT Show this year. You and I were at the same event together.
Yeah.
And, you were over at one side and I was over at another side, and our mutual friend Tier, I said, hey, these are my goals for this year's show. This is what I want to get done. This is who I would like. Actually, I didn't even say who I wanted to talk to. I said, this is what I want to get done. Help me get it done. And he was like, come to this event with me. And I was like, let's go. So we go to this event. No one told me it was like a very chill cowboy hats and button ups event, but I'm in Las Vegas. So I wear something where my nipples are showing. So this is an interesting event, and this is going to be perceived well with my tight leather pants. So I go with Tier, who's in a button up, and we go in, and I said, these are my four objectives, right? And he's like, perfect, let's go. So we start going. I start having conversations with some people. I talked to Cryptex, talked to Zach. over with PSE and all of that and Heritage, and shook hands, walked away. And he goes, Kelsey, you got to meet John from Nosler, because I want to take our suicide prevention buddy check bracelet and make it 100% American made. And that would mean I need an ammunition dealer to be like, what's up, girl? I got brass for you. Yeah. And so, because you're going to love this guy. So he brings me over and I'm talking to this huge dude and we're having a conversation. And I have this thing where if I feel connected to someone, if you ask anyone, I do this. I'm like, I'm known for three things. I'm loud and obnoxious, and I will get your attention if I have to fight you for it. Number two, I send voice notes like a psychopath and refuse to text you. Yeah. And number three, if I feel connected to you, I take my jewelry off and give it to you.
Yeah.
I'm having this conversation, but to the left of John is this other tall dude in jeans with a button up like plaid shirt on, who was just sitting there listening with his hands in his pockets and hadn't said his name and hadn't said anything about him. So I'm talking to John, we're handing off, we're having this back and forth conversation. We connect on something really spiritual. And I look at him and I'm like, I just take it off. I'm like, bro, I got to give this to you. This is what it means. It means, I'm just here and that now you can call.
Yeah.
This is what the buddy check is. And he was like, yes. And he hugs me. And at this point I'd been talking about how I love knives because I live in a country that does not allow me to have my own rights and carry a gun for my own safety or for my family's safety. That right. bothers me. The only gun I'm allowed is the one on my t-shirt. And even yeah. then, if I fly in that, that's a problem. So yeah. you can thank Dallas Alexander for that. He provided me with my only allowed gun in Canada. Anyway, yeah. so I'm talking about this and I'm like, I go for runs. I do all these things by myself and I always have a knife. And I said, I had this knife on me for a long time, but I left it at my producer's house and I haven't had one for a year and I need to go get one. And Brandon goes, hi, I work with Montana Knife Company. Take a look at this. And he gives this, he goes, what do you think this? I'm like, dude, I've been trying to get one of those, but they can't ship to Canada and I couldn't get one. And I'm like, this is amazing. I love this company. Like, I know all about them. And he goes, so this is who I am and you can have that. That's my knife and it's yours now. And I nearly started weeping because that to me means everything.
Yeah.
And he saw that there was something connected there and he did what I do to others and I've never had that done to me, which is a very weird thing. So this knife has a lot. This knife travels with me. This goes everywhere. I wear it everywhere, especially when I'm in the States by myself, when I'm doing any press or any work. This works in the warehouse with me. This goes on runs with me. This goes on hikes with me. My son uses this knife. This knife is a part of my life and my son has already claimed it for when he's old enough. So, this knife is going to be in my family because I'm a knife person. I'm not a gun person. I was forced to become in love with sharp objects. Right. And so this knife sticks with me and goes with me everywhere. I'm very careful though, because I always have to, I carry it in my fanny pack, right? If I'm going somewhere fancy and I can't tuck it into a dress, I put it in my fanny pack, but I have to be careful because I've gone to the airport and gone, oh my God, no, they almost took it, and run back to my baggage and put it in a checked bag. So I have it with me. Cause if I lose this, oh, devastating.
Yeah. When we were traveling this winter and my wife thought she had emptied her purse, but she had some like secret pouch in there. I don't know. Those purses are like a black hole. And they like kick her bag off to the side and she like gives this like, oh, and she looks at me, like rolls her eyes, like, oh, these stupid TSA people. Like it's probably a bottle of lotion. Mm-hmm. And like, I peek around the corner and I see the x-ray and I see a speed goat. I'm like, yeah, you're done there. So the TSA agent got himself a speed goat because we didn't have time to rent it back to the car. But and that's it's actually something. I need to get you a mini goat because you're the exact. A lot of what you talked about is the exact reasons I tell like women especially love carrying those little mini goats because that's that same knife, but it's smaller, but you can carry it in a pocket. You can clip it inside a pair of leggings. If you're just wearing like leggings and a sports bra for a jog or clip it on a sports bra or like it, but it's like, it weighs like 1 ounce, right? Like that knife weighs like 1.4 ounces. So you can carry it and you still have, let's face it, you're probably not going to need it for self-defense. It's probably mostly just going to be a handy thing to have around.
Do you know where I live? But it also is
nice peace of mind to have some self-defense too.
Yeah, we've had a lot of stabbings recently in Canada. We're kind of being overwhelmed with them right now. A father was out with his daughter, very young daughter and wife at Starbucks in downtown Vancouver. And a gentleman, a human being, was vaping in front of the door and blowing it on his child. So he said something. He turned his back to that said person. That person stabbed him in the neck. And everybody sat there and watched him bleed out to death. And no one tried to stop the bleeding. And everyone just filmed it. And then the guy who did it sat down and watched the guy bleed out and kept smoking his vape until the cops showed up. So
holy shit.
That's just, so when it comes to you, hey, you may never need it. That's fine. But I'm 108 pounds soaking wet, 5 foot of just an angry ball. So I would rather, it is a leveler and it is a, puts me, sure, maybe not with a gun as a level playing field, but it makes me a fucking problem for you though, if you try to take me. Yeah. So the reality is we have a ton of trafficking in Canada. We have a ton of human trafficking in the United States. The two borders that I live alongside on the Washington border have a ton of human beings going through there. That's not my knowledge. That is Secret Service and other cool people that work in the US telling me this, going, you live on what border? Right. So I am always the person who I would rather have it than never need it, than right. need it and not have it.
Right. And that's, you know, I hope nobody ever has to use one in that way. But if you're my daughter and you weigh 108 pounds, I have three daughters.
Yes, you
it's
do.
My daughter and, you know, they're off at college somewhere or whatever, like, and somebody tries to do something, I'd way rather have them have something than nothing at all, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a hell of a deterrent, especially if you haven't actually been grabbed yet and you just pull it out. They're going to probably go pick on an easier target, you know, because nobody wins a knife fight. It's, you know, but it's real. And that ability to carry it super easily, you know, where it's just super light and having it on you is pretty cool. I got to go back to your house. My house burned down in, what was it? 2000, probably 14, 15. I can't remember about then. And 2015 and back to the stuff thing. It's amazing how your house can burn down. And I think it's more traumatic probably when you're a child, because like all your little toys and everything really mean a lot to you. Right. But mm-hmm. as an adult, it was an interesting thing because I was only really bummed out about like two or three things.
Right.
There was a couple guns. I had a bigger gun safe in my shop, so luckily they didn't all burn, but I had a couple guns in there. But I had a handmade quilt from my grandma who was like 80 when she made it. And then by the time this happened, she wasn't making another one. And that's about it. Like I was surprised. It taught me like, it's pretty amazing how much stuff, and you, like you said, there's difference between stuff and things that you actually value, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like even the hat that you're wearing right now, it has value. It's going to have value to somebody someday. If it burned down today, it probably like, oh, you could replace that hat. But if that hat belonged to your grandmother, it would have value. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's where like, you know, you talk about hats. My mom she's a hat collector and she's always, but it's a hat collector of like my grandfather's on both mm-hmm. sides. My great grandfather, she has in her bathroom, like 25 hats up there and they're all like worn out old cowboy hats. And it's from who wore them. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's not the new hat. It's the hat. It's like, you know, the fact that your hat someday when it's your son's or if it's your grandson's or granddaughter's, it's like, oh no, this is the hat that grandma wore. Like, it's pretty cool.
You know? Well, for me, I'm glad you bring that up because I actually have never had this conversation with somebody on the show where we've talked about important items in people's lives that are not, like you said, they're not, you know, from Target or these things. Like I've never actually had this conversation where another person has resonated with me on, you know, an item being important in the way that you do. And it's funny because when I started wearing a hat, I only started wearing, you know, when I was in the Army, I wore a beret and I wore a helmet. And then when I got out, I started wearing baseball caps because there was something I felt like missing on the top of my head. And then I got into the fashion industry with my company, and, you know, we're kind of sidestepping that from the fashion side and turning that back into a little bit of a different thing again. But when I did that, you know, I never wore hats, never had this thing. But then when the opportunity, you know, to start a podcast came out, I was like, well, if I wear a hat, like, you know, it may make me stand apart. But not only that, is I don't have to worry about all the same things that all these other people who do shows and are on TV have to worry about. I don't have to worry about my hair. I can slap a hat on the top of my head. And then when I started doing some deeper work on myself, and, you know, that's when the psychedelics came in, but I started really diving in. I started going, why do I wear a hat? And I started to have that kind of conversation with myself. And I realized that it was more of a protection mechanism than it is anything else. It's this thing that I can feel safe with, and I can be the version of myself I wish I was every time I had the hat on. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, it holds its space in my life in a lot of different ways. And I, you know, I'm optimistic because it's Daisy May that they're going to last forever because the quality is so high. And that's why I work with Gage. And now when I look back at, like, you know, brought up my book, like, I wore a hat in that photo and we were hemming and hawing if I was going to do that. And when the publisher actually asked for a photo, we didn't have a photo. All I had was that was from the first SHOT Show I had ever done. And it was a friend took a quick, like, snap photo. And I was actually smiling for the first time, but I was wearing my hat. And so that hat in particular, like every hat that Gage makes me after that is special, but this guy, this is the hat.
Yeah.
That's the hat. I'm poltergeist in a lot of people's eyes. You know, they always ask me, like, why do you dress like you're going to a funeral? Yeah. Coming to take your soul. That's why. I mean, come on.
Well, and I remember when we were at that Cryptek party in Vegas, and you were there and you were all dressed up, and when you definitely are very, it leaves an imprint, like you're memorable when, like, if you were another chick at the bar without your hat, sometimes I feel like tattoos does that as well for certain people. Like you might notice a tattoo on somebody, like some feature, right? But like, I'm not sure that I would quickly recognize you in 2 years at a bar in Vegas if you weren't wearing your hat, like if you walked in without your hat, right? Mm-hmm. But like, I think you'll find when you go back to SHOT Show year after year, if you're wearing your hat, like you're going to be recognized way more often, which is interesting. It does make you stand out, right? And and it is interesting how hats have meaning, like with cowboys, for example. Like, it's like they're not a cowboy. They could go do the same job during the day, and if they weren't wearing a hat, like, it's like they're not a cowboy, you know, like, yeah, right? It's kind of wild. Right. And, you know, I've been one from time to time. Now I tend to wear a ton of different hats because I have all these friends and these outdoor brands and stuff. And so I'm always wearing, like, today I'm going to wear Everly Stock, tomorrow I'm going to wear Sitka. Like, but it's interesting because back when I was just a totally regular dude as a lineman, a lot of times I'd wear the same damn old nasty ball cap for like 2.5 years straight. I mean, the thing is disgusting. Before you finally finally give it up. Yeah. And all it is just a stupid cap.
Yeah.
But it is weird how, and then obviously when you talk about Gage's stuff, like that's a whole nother level, right? Cause that hat's like a custom made knife, right? It's like a knife that's just cranked out of China. And then there's like a custom made knife, right? And that hat, that's where, like, that hat already has value and meaning in it when it's brand new. And then it just gets more, you know, the longer you wear it.
Yeah. We have, so we have some product like that too. It's funny, the house fire stuff. So yeah, we, you know, stuff that's important that gets passed down. We didn't have a lot of that, but I have that with my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is big on kitchen stuff and, ridiculous on kitchen stuff, actually, if I'm being completely transparent with you. She has a gadget for all things and everything, and it's always the best quality of the thing, so you know it's going to last. And right. it's like that. So we get a lot of that stuff from her. And her father, who we named my son after, Jack, he just passed away. Was it last year or the year before? I think it was last year. And they said, hey, you know, we have some of his old books. Do you want any of his old books? I'm a big book person. I love books. I love physical books though. I'll take stuff to read if I'm going on planes and things on like on a not a Kindle, but you know, I'll read it on something like that. But I like physical books. And so right. I have all these amazing older books from like the 1920s about medical stuff and about business. And it's like the woman is supposed to be in the house. And it's like this whole amazing time capsule, if you will, that gets to be passed down. And then when I stepped into jewelry, my mother passed down a couple things to me recently that she had that we got out of the fire, because there was two. So both, one was one when I was like around like 12, 13. And then the next one was that I was in high school. And so I wasn't a big stuffed person anyway. So jewelry became a thing for me through art therapy in the company. And there are pieces that I still make personally for the company that those I can see being something and that I'm hoping that people pass down and keep and have as a part of their life, because I can understand when you make something that is so fancy and so nice and people don't wear it maybe all the time or don't use it all the time. I can understand why, you know, starting to put out a product that has an everyday use, an everyday piece. Like when I see people wear my buddy check, that's it. That does it for me every time. Cause then I know that they get it. They get something right. that I've been trying to convey, which is, you know, it's got a certain story attached, just like your knives have a certain story attached, like your kitchen knives, for example, like those kitchen knives. I'm not going to lie to you. I've been the person who gets your text messages and sits and waits and still never has succeeded. And I can understand why. It's because you've got a community that supports what you're doing, and what you're doing is creating something that is going to stand the test of time ultimately. But you have to admit that took a risk. That took a huge risk in you in moving over to that. And that was a huge leap to kind of do. And I know you've been with your wife a long time, so that was a big family decision, I'm sure of it. But you
it's actually interesting with her, because you know, when I met her, I was a lineman for the power company, and you know, I was divorced, four kids. So I was a single dad, four kids, doing the lineman stuff, and I had this dream of MKC. But when I met her, and you know, we ended up getting married, you know, she had asked me like, why aren't you making knives? Like, why you used to make knives like full time? Why aren't you doing that? Explained like the whole economy thing and whatnot. But then I explained to her my dream and goals of Montana Knife Company. And she's like, well, why aren't you doing that? And I'm like, well, you know, time has to be right. You know, didn't have the money for it. Wasn't like personal life wasn't there for it. And she's like, well, you should quit your job and do that. And I was like, well, slow down. Like, it's not there yet. And she's like, no, you need to do this. She's like, I have the house. I've got the kids. Like, when you come home from work at night, you're in your shop. You do this. And that's when MKC really started. Is it was really her saying like, I'll take care of all the other shit. You just go do that. And so then I started building it at night and in the mornings. And so that support from her, you know, cause I wasn't, I met her, I guess we got married in 16. And I started MKC in 20, but really in 19, I started like, that's when like, I was like, okay, we're getting serious about this. I was making prototypes and like starting to like get going. And, it was really because of her that it was possible.
I'm glad cool. that I'm glad you talk about her, because there's a lot of she's hot. I'm not going to lie to you. I follow her on social media. I don't pretend to not look. Please. You married up. We all know it. Everyone get
it's
on board.
True. It's okay. True.
But it's nice to hear you talk about your wife too, because it seems like and you post a lot about you guys will be in the car. You guys will be doing emails, and she is hammering out customer service and she is there all the way through. But it's nice to hear that you talk about the support systems and people that gave you the feeling that you could go and do this, because ultimately it needs to be a partnership. It cannot be one person doing something. What you're trying to achieve at the scale you're trying to achieve it is a team oriented event.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one thing, like for people that want to like take off and try and build something, you gotta have that support from that partner, you know, whatever, wife, husband, whatever, they, them, however that works. You gotta have that support, because it is a ton of long hours. And that was part of my hesitation for years of starting, is because I, you know, that really wasn't quite there in the way that I thought it needed to be, to, because I knew it'd be super stressful. I knew it'd be super long hours. And it's wild. Even now, she works two rooms away now for us. She works full time for us in her office doing her thing. And I hardly see her, but even that, like, working together has its own stresses, especially in the beginning. We were smaller. I was like truly kind of like her boss and working together and training her on how to do this and that. And now, frankly, she's just running her area. And I just check in and be like, what's going on? Tell me, like, she's totally running it, which is awesome. It kind of gives that separation, but it's not easy. And you have to be, you know, you have to agree to be pulling the wagon in the same direction and agree that it's going to be hard work, you know. But once you have that support of that spouse, holy shit, you know, then it's like game on, you know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. The work-life balance, a lot of people don't get to experience.
Yeah. And there's not a lot of balance there right now. Like, you know, but it's cool because of the company that we're, when you love what you do, right? Like, work is really enjoyable. Like, yeah, we did finally take off earlier this month and went to Hawaii for a week with our kids and took just a true vacation. But we also get to do a lot of things like a SHOT Show or a Total Archery Challenge or whatever. And it's like, it's work, but then there's the cool dinner out in Vegas or in Salt Lake or whatever. That's also like, yeah, technically, I guess it's work because we're going to dinner with some people from the industry, but it's not the kind of work that most people are having to do. So you have to count your blessings and understand that, like, you know, the other cool thing is like, yeah, she's answering emails in the truck on the way home from a kid's basketball game, but we also got the chance to leave at 2 p.m. to go watch that game. And I was in a position at a corporate company that, like, I'm balancing going and watching a game because I don't know how much vacation time I want to burn. Right. And that sucks. So it's give and take, you know.
It's nice to see, regardless, the support that you both give one another and how involved your family is in your business.
Yeah.
Like your children.
Yeah. Especially in the very, very beginning. Interesting, right now, they're at that age. They're just so busy that they don't do a lot in the shop right now. Now they will more in the summer, but during the school year, if they're getting straight A's and they're excelling in their sports, like, that's a full plate. My daughter cleans our building every Sunday. My junior in high school, she does that. They generally don't do too much out here during the week. But boy, when I started this, like, my initial prototypes and stuff, that first 400 knives, Sadie was probably 12, 13 when that happened. And she was literally helping me hand grind handles. Macy was packaging. A lot of the original packages had Macy's little handwriting with, you know, misspelling on the package. And, you know, Hank has helped me. And so they've been super, super supportive. And then my oldest daughter right now, she's off right now from college, and she's been helping out, working part time. And, you know, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see down the road. Like, if anything, I hope they're just seeing what's happening. And if they learn nothing more than, like, anything's possible, you know, I don't know if they'll work for us forever, if they'll end up in MKC down the road. I don't really care. Like, if they want to go do their own thing, find their own passion, that's great. But what I want them to see is, like, a regular person, if you put your mind to it and you work hard enough, like, I'm building a big brand right now that, frankly, like, I even would have thought was impossible 2 years ago, you know? So, you know, they say anything's possible, but it's really true, but it takes a lot of work, you know?
Well, you have to remember, though, too, when those moments of, you know, it's difficult and it takes a lot of work, everything around us, what's that saying? Everything around us was created by somebody no smarter than you and I.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
why not?
And honestly, one of the smartest things I did do was admit that I am kind of stupid. And so I got help, right? So, like, finding somebody that knows marketing, and I don't know that I would have done much different in my custom knife stuff, but, like, you know, like, as someone who makes jewelry, or if you do paintings, like Nicole does, Tier's wife, you're the painter and you're the marketer. and you're the shipping department and you're everything else, right? You're the PR. I knew to build the brand I wanted to build that I couldn't be all those things. And so I know knives, I'm a knife maker. That's the part I went after. And then I luckily, and you know, I did get lucky in this sense that it was like, I hit a home run on the first swing. But when I found Brandon, initially hired him to do some content, whatnot, when I started realizing how good he was, I then turned around and actually offered him a big chunk of ownership in the company to become my business partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned that over to him knowing that like I needed him to get where I was going. Mm-hmm. And he needed somebody like me to have a product to build and sell that was worth marketing, right? So it was hand in hand. And so I think that admitting what you don't know and being willing to go out and find somebody that does know it, and figure out a creative way, like I couldn't afford to pay him. So what I do, I give him 40% of the business, right? Mm-hmm. And then it was like, hey, you know, if this thing goes where it needs to go, then 60% is plenty for me, you know?
Right. Yeah. Piece of it. You don't need to have everything. You need to understand that. We did that when we started to, prior to COVID. Oh man, things went fast from the kitchen table. They went fast and furious. I had a boom like that. And once COVID hit, we cut back completely, cut back staff, cut back everything. Cause then you realize, well, a lot of this is being farmed out depending on stuff that I can do. And then I'm okay to do. And it's about acknowledging, like you said, what can't I do? And how do I find support in that? Because you can't be everything to everyone and you can't do everything for everyone. And if you're one that's making product, like you master in knives, you've been doing them so long. I hand make a certain amount of products to keep my mental health at keel. It's a bit, we're in a different, we do different things for different reasons, but ultimately what you do is a form of art therapy in my personal opinion. And I feel like there's got to be some benefit to that for you in constantly having hands-on with things. So what's that been like kind of going through this trajectory? Because you, like I said, you've gone 0 to 60 fast and that means in all aspects of your life. So there has to be some component where getting back to just making knives helps you in some way.
Yeah. And actually that's the part I missed in the last year from the standpoint of, you know, when we, before we moved into this building, my little shop was just buried and there was no way I could really work in it. And I will say that part of it, I actually just got back in there last week, starting to kind of do a design. I'm going to do a custom knife. And that part I do miss of just going out and just all my own work, my own hands, my own design, me by myself in my shop. It's very therapeutic. And that part I do miss, because a lot of what I'm doing today is sitting in this chair, sitting on meetings and, you know, doing that kind of stuff. So, I miss that part for sure. The people aspect of this company though, is the part that I think's incredibly therapeutic. You know, I missed, like when I worked for the big corporate kind of entity, you know, there was definitely pride in like stepping back and seeing like a power line you built or a power pole structure and whatnot. You're definitely building something there, but it definitely, I think from poor leadership, it definitely felt like you were just kind of working for a giant corporation that could give a shit. And the connections, like meeting somebody like you or becoming connected to a random customer through Instagram that just connected with our company and started buying knives, and you know, connecting with our employees and feeling like I can provide a better place to work at than I was being provided for me when I was there. Like I tell stories all the time of like, no, these fuckers, this is what it was like working for them. It's not going to be that way here. Now, it's also not going to be, not everything's fair. And so I'm going to rip your ass if you deserve it, which I don't really have to do that around here. I've got great people. But, you know, there's some pride I have in just building a company that people enjoy working for. You know, there's a freezer downstairs with two elk in it just for employees to take home at night. Like, both of my kids' elk that they shot last year, we put in that freezer just for employees to take steaks home.
Wow.
Like, that's the kind of stuff that I want to be able to do that you can't really quantify or put on a job posting. Like, I'm not sure if that goes under the 401k or the dollars per hour, like free elk meat.
Goes in perks. But
yeah. Shooting your bow at lunchtime, right? Like if I brought my bow to Northwestern Energy and shot it in the parking lot, I'd have been fired. You know, so there's certain perks to the job that, that I think are missing at a lot of big corporate places that take the heart and soul out of it.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more. The idea that people should be exposed to things that make them happy while doing work. I mean, the correlation between 4-day work weeks and productivity is huge. People don't seem to understand that. We do 4-day work weeks here. And I noticed when I started how quickly things like dogs, space to meditate or sit or do yoga or whatever the hell you need to do, and 4-day work weeks. That was the money right there. Oh, and then also like for the vegans, the vegan Pop-Tarts. Chill out. Where they're not all vegans. Look, I said the word and I think your body just convulsed just slightly.
Yeah.
I'm not a vegan. I eat a lot of meat. I'm saying for those people that live in Vancouver that are employed by me, it's fine. My point is those perks. But that's the sad part. Business owners should know that those shouldn't have to be perks. Those little things, if you can't do them, should just be standard operating procedures in order to keep people happy, their mental health well, and then wanting to come and work hard for you every day.
Yeah. And we offered, we kind of set it up where, and it, I think they'll probably start doing it again now, but like, it's something we always fought for when we were linemen is like working 4-10s and you get an extra day off on the weekend, right? So now you got a 3-day weekend. So now your vacation time means it stretches a lot more because you don't have to take a Friday off to go do something with your friends or whatever. And so like last year I offered to my employees, hey, those of you that want to work 4-10s, you can work 4-10s. But some people, like honestly, I worked with some older guys at Northwestern that didn't like the long day, didn't like the long work day. They didn't have kids at home anymore, and coming 5 days a week for 8 hours was better than working for 10. So I think providing some flexibility in schedule is nice. There's definitely, it's interesting. And that's something that's been shown in some studies that you can offer somebody 401k, you can offer them more pay. But if you just offer them some small perk that's actually worth way less money, but it has more meaning to them, like an extra 2 days off of paid vacation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, or an extra 5 days off of paid vacation, they would rather have an extra week of vacation than an extra dollar per hour on the year. You know, it's interesting how I think there's a different, and people say, you hear this shit about like, nobody wants to work these days, kids don't want to have to work. And there's definitely that thing out there, but I have now, I think, one employee in my shop over the age of 40, and I have only a few over the age of 30. Mm-hmm. I have a bunch of young, in shape, good looking young guys and gals that are working for me. And like people walk in here and they're like, holy shit, I thought I'd see like a bunch of old fat guys like grinding on knives. And it's like, no, this place is like, it's a pretty fucking cool place to hang out. It's a bunch of young kids that are like super stoked about what's happening. I love that feel. I'm the old guy here and I'm only 42,
That's the thing though. You cultivated and created a community and a spot where people can come work hard, and you're a part of something bigger. What you're doing is not, you're not creating knives for some brand that's going to be sold at Walmart. You're creating knives for some of the coolest people in the world. Your products, who you are, what you do, what your company stands for on a global stance is known for a reason. So being able to go and work in an environment like that, of course, young people who are driven are going to want to go do that. But it's also, I think, a direct reflection of where you live and your community at a large and what you've done for your community. They show up for you just as much as you've shown up for them. So I think that's a reflection of your leadership as well.
Well, thanks. Yeah, no, it's really cool. I don't know. I'm definitely faking it till I make it, but
it's okay.
Seems like I'm doing something right.
You know what? There's a reason that saying exists. I don't care what anybody says. Of course you put work and you put effort and you're not, but this truest sense of fake it till you make it. Cause does anybody really know what we're doing? Do you really have a clue every day you wake up?
Right. Yeah. And actually that's actually the life that I was kind of leading for a little while there with what I was doing with the corporate stuff, is when you actually do know exactly what's going to happen for the entire day, it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, holy shit, is this the next 30 years? Like, that's going to suck. And so, and I say all that, I actually love the lineman work. I love the job. I didn't like the place I was reporting to and the people I was reporting to. The guys I worked with, the hiking through the mountains with a chainsaw, cutting trees out of lines and climbing power poles and working a bucket truck, like that was all rad. You know, I think it's probably very similar at times in the military where you don't like that piece of shit officer you're reporting to, because clearly his leadership skills are lacking, but the men and women you're serving with and the job you're doing is very fulfilling.
150,000%. I would have died for every single person I stood beside, but there are some people that were above me that I would have burned alive and laughed. Rape a bunch of women in our space. You're going to make us hate you.
In another house fire. People are going to start asking you questions. You keep having house fires. Like, who's in these fires?
My parents had the house fires. I knock on all the wood that exists around my physical being, have been fortunate to not have that happen in my own home as a grown adult with children and husbands. So I'm like, we're good. That's their karma. There's something about them. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, they're the hardest working people I've ever met. I mean, they're long haul truck drivers and they team drive together. They're adorable.
That's awesome.
You know what the sad part is though? They text me last week. And listen to me when I say I'm not exaggerating. Their transport burned down.
Seriously, what is the deal?
My mother was driving down the freeway. Dad was in the bunk with the dog. And out of nowhere at the right-hand side of the dashboard, something sparked inside of it. Within 3 minutes, the truck was almost gone. My dad had to grenade the brakes and pull them out and get out. And they sent me videos of it. And I'm like, what happened?
Holy shit.
It happened to another similar truck like the week before too. Something in the dash was a newer truck.
All the electronics.
That's why my parents now refuse to drive anything that's not made from like the 90s that my dad can physically fix on his own.
Yeah. Good old 89 Peterbilt.
Yeah. They had those before. Yeah. They had those before. We got this new one that's all high tech and it's got a bigger bunk and a shower. And yeah, that's the one that burns down. I'm like, I'm so sorry. But I digress. The other thing I wanted to touch base with you on before you jump here on me was, I know how important hunting is in your life and the fact that you get to feed so many individuals and do these amazing things. Talk to me about how you got into hunting and how you see that helping not only you and those around you, but your own mental health.
Yeah. You know, I was actually talking to a couple guys yesterday and it's an interesting thing. You know, my parents didn't really hunt. My dad used to bird hunt when I was probably really young or before I was even born. Not really against hunting, just didn't really hunt. But I had an uncle that took me before I was ever eligible to actually hunt myself. He would take me along. And then there was two different random guys in town that I took it for granted, like it was just kind of normal. But I look at it now and I'm like, it's kind of amazing, because if I was just taking, it wasn't even like it was one of my buddy's dads. It was like, if I just randomly kind of knew a kid in town and I was taking him hunting. And in these days, unfortunately, you'd be like looked upon like you're like, why are you taking this little kid, you know, hunting in the woods alone? It's weird. But it was a small town. I grew up in a small logging town, so we knew everybody. But I think I was constantly asking him questions about hunting enough to where he was like, hey, you want to come with me? And I was like, yeah. And I started learning how to bow hunt with him and him and another guy and my uncle. And they took me kind of through junior high into high school. And then I finally had a license and I could go myself. And I look back on it now of how much that changed like my course of my life. That hunting became such a big part of it. It's pretty incredible. And the lesson from that is like, if you know somebody in your town that's a little kid that maybe doesn't have a dad or, you know, and I wasn't even from some sad case. It was just my parents didn't hunt. But even if that's just the case, if there's a kid or a friend of your kids that's asking you a ton about hunting and seems to be a responsible little kid, like, invite them along, because you have no idea what kind of impact that will make on them, you know, years down the road. And I think there's no better place that like I connect with my kids than out of cell phone service, out in a tent or in our camper, going hunting and just spending time together, being out in Mother Nature, getting away from computers and cell phones and the daily rat race and all that. The mental health side of it, I think, comes less from the shooting of an animal and it does of just the being in nature. And there's also parts of Montana, there's parts of British Columbia. It doesn't matter where you live. There's parts of where you live that you will never go if you don't have a reason to go. Mm-hmm. And hunting is a really great reason. Like, you know, I think it's why people hike. Hiking definitely is a good reason to go, but there's a lot of places we hunt that you wouldn't go hike. Like it forces you to go, you know, drive to the Missouri River breaks in the middle of nowhere. You wouldn't just drive all the way out there to go for a hike generally. And I think it's a cool way to kind of force you to explore the area you live in. Cause a lot of us are guilty of living in gorgeous, beautiful areas and we don't take advantage of it. Like people come visit us from out of state and they're like, oh, we went on this hike to this waterfall. And it's like, shit, I've lived here 30 years and I've never done that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the hunting thing, especially in the last number of years, it's been all about trying to get my kids animals. I mean, I'm hunting a little more now for myself with MKC. But seeing that success, teaching my, you know, like I said, three daughters and a son, teaching them to be capable.
Mm-hmm.
I never forced it on them. If they wanted to go, fine. If not, fine. They all love going. It's pretty cool. I love it.
It's nice to see it being passed down. That's for sure. It's not, like you said, not a lot of people are going to get that opportunity to be taught, let alone to get to go on some of these like life-changing, like once in a lifetime opportunities. You know, I've seen so many photos of so many of our friends up in Alaska in the backcountry that get to go experience things, which is rare. And a girlfriend of mine, you went hunting with Natalie. You guys went hunting and to get to witness, knowing her, but getting to witness her on camera, experience those moments and have that. You know, that's something that you can never take from someone, that experience to downing an animal, to feeding your family and friends around you and the community around you is something that if more people did get to experience, could you imagine how much better this world would be?
Yeah, I totally agree. And Natalie, like the emotion that you saw on her film and stuff that we made was like not even real enough. I mean, it was very real. Like, there was a lot of emotion because, you know, she made a shot, the animal went down, but then we watched him and it was like not the time to move in because her shot was just a little far back. And so like having to leave for the night and let that animal sit there and not know if the next day it's going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be there? Her feeling bad about, you know, did I wound this animal? Am I going to lose it? Like, did I fail? Should I have taken the shot? Like, that emotion that she had like all night, not sleeping, upset and tears in the truck, all to build up to the next morning of walking up and seeing her animal laying there right where she left it dead. And then the elation, the relief, the excitement, and that connection to that food that she eats, like you can't, and there is a lot of emotion in that film, but like, there's no way to like fully capture or explain that to a person that doesn't understand. And she's a, you know, a celebrity that gets to do and experience a lot of cool things, but I'll guarantee you when she's, you know, taking her last few days of her life, that'll be an experience she'll never forget. And that's the cool thing with kids. You know, my kids are very accomplished with all their sports they do, and they do sports 17 months a year. It's insane. When I ask them about like what their favorite ever game they ever played, they can never name a game. They can't remember like specific plays, nothing about it. They just remember it all as a whole. Every sport kind of all blended together. If I ask them about any of the deer in our house that, you know, the antlers they've got in their rooms, or if I ask them about any hunt that they've been on, they will tell you where we camped. They will tell me days we hunted, that what meals we ate. Like, it's ridiculous the detail they'll remember from when they were 10 or 11, 8 years later. Like right now, they know exactly every detail. And so it's an example and it's proof of the impact. And there again, you talk about mental health, like there's something mentally going on there. And I think a confidence booster, like going out in the woods, you know, my 14-year-old boy shot a bear with his bow last year by himself on the ground, 10 yards away. Like if you're 14 and you can go out and shoot a bear with your bow at 10 yards, what in life down the road can you not do?
Exactly.
You know? So I think there's, even for my daughters, I think, you know, my 12-year-old girl, she shot a bull elk with her rifle. I was with her, but she was kind of by herself because where I set her up, I couldn't talk her through it. And actually, she almost kind of failed in the situation because she was trying to squeeze the trigger and she was all distracted and her safety was on. And I'm like, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, shoot, shoot, shoot. And then finally I hear click, takes her safety off and shot this elk. But she did it all, that whole process there by herself. I was 10 yards behind her and couldn't move. I just feel like there's a lot of lessons to be learned from that. And then seeing death, being a part of that, understanding the circle of life, consequences of not doing your job correctly, you know, the hard work involved. So like, I know I'm kind of rambling, but I just in general, I think I wish more people that, especially people that were anti-hunting, I wish they could come experience it and they might have a different opinion about it. I think it's way less, you know, you see the Instagram post of the guy that drops the animal and they cheer. But I think there's a lot of context missing in that whole story. You know,
I think that's why it's perceived the way it is, because there is so much context missing.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. Especially when it comes to children, you know, there's something about small doses of adversity that when you give to them at a younger age, when the real world punches them in the face, it doesn't hurt as much. You know,
right.
The shock and awe of what happens when something gets taken and the world doesn't agree, or the person in front of you is an asshole. You know, there is something you can do when building children. And it really I mean it when I say building children, because so many of our parents nowadays are absentee parents, whether it's because people have to work two jobs to get by, or it's because our schools decide that they can be lazy and not teach them or educate them properly, regardless of whatever the reason is. The amount of things that can be learned and lessons that can be taught when you get the opportunity to, number one, be outside without a screen. I know screens are important. I understand that children need them to progress in the world that they're going to be going into, for sure. Got you on that. But the reality is, a lot of times, most kids have never been in the woods. Most kids have never had their feet on the grass. Most children don't know what it means to be in the dirt and to cultivate anything, whether that's getting an animal or just vegetables, for God's sakes, in a garden. So not only that, but the special thing about all of that to me is that it shows the type of human being and parent that you've showed up for, as you have for your children. And to me, that means that those children are going to be better parts of society because of your willingness to do the hard thing, take them out, experience death, experience loss and pain, and what it means to be in an intense situation where you could not, like you said, walk your daughter through that. She was able to go through a rifle drill that I know most service members, when being shot at, could not perform themselves. So the fact that your young daughter was able to take a deep breath instead of panic, freak out, lose the animal, turn and look at you and go, I don't know what to do. It shows that you gave them the confidence and the own self-worth and thought process that they could make it through that without you. So from a parent standpoint, just from parenting wins, I do hope at one point I can take my son to go experience that. Because I don't come from a hunting family. I don't come from a family that loves guns. We don't even have guns. Gee, I wonder why. But yeah. I want to be able to become proficient enough at that so that I can teach myself and my son that one day, because there's something about past experiences and passing them down to children, just like at the beginning of this episode, when it's something important, whether it's a tool, a knife, a hat, a piece of jewelry, whatever it is, kitchenware, those all have stories and meanings, and they all have a place in each of our histories if you allow them to. So I'm really glad that you rambled on that. Always ramble on that.
Well, and I'm not good at a lot of things, but I think that's one thing I will generally brag on is about my kids, because I've got damn good kids. And the reason I brag on it a little bit is I believe 100%. In fact, a friend of mine told me this years ago when you said about building children. My buddy that's got kids older than mine, and I was kind of asking him questions, you know, as his kids were like going into high school and mine were probably 4 or 5. he always generally kind of said one of two things. You build the children you deserve, or you build the children that you want. And what he meant by you build the children you deserve, like sometimes people end up with these like shithead people when they're 15 years old. Well, how much time and effort did you take into building of that child? And like, whose fault is that? And as far as like a shitty school or education or whatever, like, yeah, they're out there for sure. But ultimately those are excuses. Those aren't your, you know, those teachers aren't your kids' parents. It's your job to fill the gaps that teachers might leave. And quite frankly, education, it's important, but a lot of the things that happen outside the school are actually more important. And the experiences you give them, it's why, you know, even when my kids wanted to not necessarily do it a couple times when they were younger, I made them do like 4-H and they have to raise a steer or a pig or whatever. And now they can't wait every year for like to get their new steer or their new pig. And but when they were little, when they were 8 or 9, it was work. And generally human beings will shy away from work where they can. Like it is, we're all mammals. We like to follow the trail, right? So when you walk through the woods, you find a trail that deer and elk walk on. It's generally the easiest path, and it's beat down because they take the easy path and they do over and over. It's not a lot of fun to step off the path and walk through the bullshit, you know, brush. And sometimes, you know, you have to force your kids to walk through the brush of life. And it, ultimately the reward on the backside of that is you end up with really, really good, resilient kids. And my kids have never owned a video game. There's a lot of great kids out there that play video games, but our kids, if you were to stop by and say hi and hang out and have a barbecue, you will notice that I have a giant basement downstairs with a TV in it and their rooms are down there and whatnot. And you'll never see them go down there until they go to bed. They'll hang out around the kitchen table or in the living room, and they'll just bullshit with all the adults. And that's never been something they've been forced to do, but like they didn't have a video game to go escape to. Their interaction was with their family. And so they hang out upstairs with us. And it's good for a kid to, you know, my kids, I remember when they were young, they would take a machete and an axe back to the woods behind our house and like build forts. And it looked like a family of beavers chopped down trees 3 feet off the ground. They'd build teepees and shit like that. And they'd come back, their hands are blistered and whatnot. And then they'd take us back and show us their fort. And, again, parenting is not easy, but it's definitely rewarding. And to me, the most important part of your parenting happens by the time your kids are 3 or 4 years old. I swear kids are easy to raise after they're 5. There's occasional adjustments. And for sure we've had occasional things even in high school where you have to have a, you know, direct them back on the path a little bit, but man, them little bastards at 1 and 2 years old are manipulative little bastards, and you got to keep them on the path. But by the time they're 3 or 4, they start school. Like, honestly, parenting's been easy, but it's not easy in the beginning. It takes a lot of effort. And if it involves you handing them a video game just to keep them busy and out of your hair, you're going to get the kids you deserve in the end, you know?
No, 150%, 150%. It's so funny to hear children with the machetes. Our son got it wasn't a machete. It wasn't an axe. It was a little axe. It was a tiny axe. But for his little body, he drug it all the way over to the only forest near our area. And people were like, does your son have a hatchet? Not photo. I said, yes, he got his hatchet at 4. And we go and we chopped out and we make teepees and things like that. I don't think people appreciate it, but I frankly don't care, because I think there's these things you can teach kids and you can teach them safety and they will listen. And I understand knives and tiny humans don't always agree and mix, but if you can teach a child about the rights and wrongs and the what not to do's and to do's, and then on some level you have to let them learn themselves, right? That's the other thing. They got to learn consequences on their own.
Yeah, I got stitches when I was 8 years old building a tree fort for my saw. Like, stitches aren't a big deal. You know, chicks dig them. Just, it's like, who gives a shit? So, like, kids are going to cut themselves, you know, and they learn responsibility. They learn the consequences of being a little bit irresponsible. And by the time they're 12, 13 years old and they have a rifle in their hands, they understand consequences. They understand the respect, and a firearm is no big deal. I can hand my kids a gun and they can handle it. And it's like, they're not scared of it. It's no big deal. They respect it, treat it with care. They've seen what it does to an animal. They know the consequences of it. That's like with hunting. That's why I think, people just don't understand that there's so much taught there that while kids are playing with guns on a video game, it's a whole different experience and a whole different message, you know?
Yeah, and the realities.
War is cool, right? War's fun. War's just a blast, right? And they haven't seen what people who have gone, and I'm not a veteran, but like they haven't seen what people have gone to actual war, what that actually looks like, you know? And so, I think a lot of it has to do with parenting early in life, you know?
Yeah, no, 100%. And we have that conversation with my son because he'll want to play war, or he'll want to play army men, right? And he'll want to do those things. And my mommy doesn't like to play army men. He knows mommy was an army man. He calls mommy army man. Mommy was an army man. And I was like, yeah, for sure. Yeah, because I could be whatever I want to be. So I was an army man. And and we have these conversations. And I know down the road, there'll be those harder conversations. But the difference is I'm willing to have those with him, right? I'm willing to parent him and build him into a proper human being that, you know, hopefully things can swing back to some type of normalcy for, because ultimately what's the point if we're not all trying to create a better next generation?
Well, if his buddies all think army men look like you, of course they want to be army men. They want to they want to hang out with army men. They, you know, I didn't know army men were this good looking.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens. Listen, I only look that good looking because most of the time I'm only beside men who are all beat. So it's like these big, huge 6-foot guys who carry all the guns. I just look like a good option because I'm the only one that's a female. So listen, that's how it works, man. That's it. Hey, you just got to blend. But I know you got to jump, so I want to respect your time. But look, I'd love to have you come back on. We'll have more conversations about this because I think there's a lot of things I want to pull apart with you. And you've got a lot of great advice. I think parents need to hear, other individuals need to hear, entrepreneurs who just, honest to God, so many people have great ideas and do want to start things, but they're so fearful of starting it. And you are such a great example of what it means to just, you know, pull the pin, dive right in, and not only hope for the best, do everything you can to make sure that hoping for the best turns into success. And so I'm stoked to have had you on the show, my friend.
Well, thank you. And I'd love to come back on. It was fun. And yeah, I feel like we could dive down lots of rabbit holes. So let's do it again for sure. And I got to get you on mine as well. I got to get my assistant to get a hold of you and get you to come on mine. But I'm trying, and I know it's not going to be a reality forever, but I'm trying to do all mine in person, just because I love like the in-person thing, right? But when you live in Montana, when you live in Vancouver, it's not always an easy reality. So, but when you're, you know, and it is cool with the knife company, we definitely have a fair amount of people randomly stopping by, and we are along the interstate. That's a pretty main corridor. So, fortunately I've had people to be able to be in studio, on my podcast so far. So next time you're down here, I got to have you on. Screw Andy. You don't want to go do his podcast. You've done that. So,
I mean, I've done it a few times now.
More listeners. So,
nah, you know what? It's not about the listeners. I don't care about that. If I cared about that, I wouldn't do a lot of shows. It's not about that. People can have platforms all they want. At the end of the day, does it fill my cup? Does it make me feel like I've helped someone? Do it? Have I said something that's worth hearing? That's all that matters to me. So speaking of that, where can people find your podcast? Where can they find social media, and how do they support MKC?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. My personal page is just Josh Smith Knives on Instagram and Facebook. And then, you know, we have our Montana Knife Company Instagram, and and then my podcast is, because I'm not creative, it's just The Josh Smith Show.
It's very creative, man. I love it.
Right. The only thing that would be less creative is the John Smith Show, right? Because it's you see John Smith on every gas pump in the country.
Everything. So,
credit card fraud, you know. The Josh Smith Show and our Instagram pages, that's the best way. So
perfect. Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much. Everyone else, you stick with me. Everyone else, we'll see y'all next week.